T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It is ESPN Upstate, ESPNUpstate.com, radio.com app. Willie P. Diesel here with you. Hope you're enjoying yourself on a Monday, the 7th day of October 2019. Atlanta Braves sitting right now 8 defensive outs away from the NLCS. Make it 8 outs as they get a strikeout from Josh Tomlin, and right now very much involved in basically a game where their bullpen has shown up in the way that you would want it to in a game where the winner advances. Luke Jackson's put forth a nice performance. They got a scoreless inning out of Newcomb, first 2 outs from Tomlin. And right now, if you are or drawing it up from the Braves' perspective, do Green in the 8th inning, and then do Melanson in the 9th, you pack your bags, and you have a happy flight back from St. Louis to Atlanta. Could not get an insurance run in the last inning with Freddie Freeman leaving the bases loaded. Echeverria also had an opportunity to strike, and he ended up hitting one all the way to the wall. And the Braves stranded the bases loaded. They've done so twice today, and a lot of times those things come back to bite you in series of this nature, but we'll see if Atlanta can close it out, and they do close out the 7th inning. Another scoreless inning from the Braves bullpen, this one put forth by Josh Tomlin, so very much looking very, very positive from an Atlanta perspective. Talked earlier a lot about the Panthers and kind of where they sit. Carolina 34-27 victory over the Jacksonville Jaguars, and with the win, Carolina Panthers head coach Ron Rivera became the all-time wins leader amongst head coaches in the 25-year history of the Carolina Panthers.
It truly is a tribute to our team. I've been very fortunate. Mr. Richardson gave me my opportunity, and he stood by me, and I was able to get past my third season. And then the players that we've had have been tremendous.
Carolina Panthers 34-27 winners over the Jacksonville Jaguars in a game that, quite honestly, Kyle Allen, for the third consecutive game, gets a win, though I don't know if his stats will bear out the fact that he won them the football game. It's obviously a situation where we're seeing a change in the way these coaches prepare their teams and construct their teams. If you construct your team to be so heavy with the quarterback's success, then when the quarterback goes out, you have to find other ways to win. They've done so with Christian McCaffrey. He touched the ball 25 times to the tune of 237 yards, including 6 catches, 19 carries. He also had 3 total touchdowns, two rushing and 1 receiving. Kyle Allen was adequate, 17-30, 181 yards and a touchdown, was sacked 3 times, and also had a fumble, but ended up getting it back. So at least he's improved in that regard. Previous week, he had lost 3 fumbles, but Carolina won anyway. Carolina also forced 3 turnovers, 3 fumbles from Gardner Minshew. He lost every one of them, including the strip sack that had Brian Burns recover and go for a touchdown that caused basically Carolina to once again have a little bit of mojo and moxie on the defensive side of the football. Luke Kuechly had 12 tackles, including a half a tackle for loss. They were able to sack Gardner Minshew twice and really live in the backfield, which was something that many believed would be a very, very difficult thing for the Panthers to do, even with the remade defensive line. But against their opponents, they've been able to make things work. And Kyle Allen has also been able to stand on the shoulders of the others overperforming around him on the Carolina team.
I'm happy for this team. to bounce back from a rough start. We're now 3-2, a long way to go, obviously, but I'm happy with the way we fought. I think you can see that with us on the field. We're never out of the game. We're going to keep fighting no matter what, and we're going to win games in different ways because we can.
That is Kyle Allen, and right now the Panthers sitting at 3-2, a game out of first place behind the still surprising New Orleans Saints, which, I mean, looking at them, I wondered how it was going to work. I didn't think that they were going to be garbage without Drew Brees, but the fact that they have been able to weather that storm without him in there, and not only weather it, but Teddy Bridgewater has looked flawless. 4 touchdowns on the day against Tampa Bay. He was 26 of 34 for 314 yards and those 4 touchdowns. Yes, he did throw a pick, but his quarterback rating was almost flawless. Alvin Kamara ran for 62 yards as well. Michael Thomas had 11 of those catches from Teddy Bridgewater for 182 yards and 2 of the scores in the 31-24 rout. Well, not route, 31-24 victory, the decisive victory over Tampa Bay. Sean Payton, after the game, had this to say about New Orleans' continued progression towards at least not losing any slippage with Bridgewater in there.
He got into a rhythm, and I felt like we did a good job protecting for him. We got the ball down the field more, and, you know, the guys made some plays. A bunch of different guys made plays, so I was happy to see, you know, some of the longer throws and the way he played, definitely.
So New Orleans, it's obviously something where now we're kind of counting down the days to when Drew Brees might be back. Many thought it was going to be after the bye week. You have basically 3 games for them left if you're looking at the division from Carolina's perspective. They have to go play the Jags now. Of course, the Jags are going to be a little salty after losing to Carolina. Then they have to go play the Bears, wonder about their record outside, and that's obviously something. The Bears are one of the most impossible teams to figure out. They looked like world beaters a week ago, and then they lose in London to Oakland. Cardinals have to play the Saints as well, so that should be a win, a walkover game for them in their own building before they hit the bye, and then they hit that part of the schedule that's very similar to where Carolina is, and the fact that they basically have the 3-team round robin between the Falcons, Saints, and Panthers. They also have their second game with the Buccaneers in that realm. For Carolina, their schedule basically over the next 3 games and 4 games, really, this is the real key stretch for Carolina. You play the Buccaneers in London next week, then you have your bye, then at San Francisco, home Tennessee, and at Green Bay. You go 3-1 in this stretch of play, you're in the playoffs. You go 2-2, you haven't insured anything, but you at least hold serve, thinking that maybe the Niners and Packers road games might be the 2 that you drop. You take care of business in London against Tampa, and you hold serve at home against the Titans, and then you think about stealing one of those 2 road games between the Niners and the Packers. Again, the Niners are no slouch, and the Packers are obviously the Packers, and they're very, very good at Lambeau Field. Then you set up the latter part of your schedule with the Falcons twice, the Saints twice, Washington, Seattle, and Indianapolis. You're going to win that Washington game. Seattle comes to you at home. Colts are a tough game. Quite a winnable road atmosphere, very much so. That's, again, part of that AFC South cross-division situation here. It's obvious that you look at that and you say, okay, you can at least maybe get one of those 2. 844-GSP, ESPN's the phone number. 71307 is the text line. The team that's been the absolute disaster in this division is the Atlanta Falcons. They now sit at 1-4, and they are searching right now for answers because they cannot seem to find the way up from the bottom. They looked like they were going toward the perceived weak part of their schedule after some momentum gained over the victory where they beat the Philadelphia Eagles on Sunday Night Football. And since then, they have looked lost defensively. They made Jacoby Brissett look like Warren Moon, Johnny Unitas. They made Marcus Mariota look like Warren Moon. And Deshaun Watson had his probably best game of his career in the National Football League since coming out of Clemson. He was 28 of 33 for 426 and 5 touchdowns. Will Fuller had 3 of them. It wasn't just the DeAndre Hopkins show. Will Fuller had 14 catches for 217 yards. Hopkins had 7 for 88 in a 53-32 victory over the Falcons. And right now, Dan Quinn, the head coach of the Falcons, is searching for any positivity at this point.
So if there's any other issue, we're going to address everything head on and go after it. Like, this is not a group that's going to wait by and hope it gets fixed, you know, and be right in front of it to address anything that needs, you know, its attention.
They have to go play at Arizona. And after Jay Gruden got fired this morning from the Washington Redskins, a lot of people seem to think that Quinn might be next. Well, the problem with firing Quinn is many believe that his particular tenure in Atlanta is tied to that of Thomas Dimitroff, the head executive over there, as he was the one who kind of built this team alongside Dan Quinn, kind of in the image and likeness of DQ, because they wanted to build things around the, quote, Legion of Boom defense that Quinn had in Seattle. And quite honestly, it has been anything but when it comes to the Atlanta Falcons. Among the other surprises in the NFL week this week, the Pittsburgh Steelers hung tough without Mason Rudolph, but fail to get themselves in after a Juju Smith-Schuster fumble led to a game-winning field goal by Justin Tucker in overtime as the Ravens beat the Steelers 26-23. And were you able to see any of that Sunday night game? It was weird when I said earlier this week that Russell Wilson might be the MVP of the league, or earlier last week, I should say, might be the MVP of the league. It's not that I forgot about Patrick Mahomes, but Patrick Mahomes almost made me eat my words. And then, at least in the first half, he looked absolutely dominant. He looked like he was the guy who many believe was the MVP. And then all of a sudden, Indianapolis just started running it down the Chiefs' throats. And they ran it to the tune of 132 yards on 29 carries from Marlon Mack, 180 overall. Jordan Wilkins also had some good runs. And Jacoby Brissett did just enough, 18 to 29 for 151, just enough to keep the football in their hands and keep things moving as Indianapolis goes into Kansas City and hands the Chiefs their first loss, 19-13. That's part of the reason why I say, for those of you who are fans of the Panthers, that this is at least something that is not what I would call a guarantee. And again, two of those three wins for the Colts have come on the road. They're 1-2 at home, so that's part of the reason why you look at them going into that road atmosphere and not necessarily thinking it's a bad one, but that's going to be a game in December. It will be indoors, so it will be a little bit of an advantage for you. But the fact remains is that that is not a walkover game by any stretch. That is going to be one that's a dogfight and could be also one where you're playing for your playoff lives if you are Carolina. 844-GSP ESPN is the phone number. Text line is at 71307. Please make sure that you put ESPN in the body of your text and be a part of the program. We'll come back, talk some Clemson football, and also talk about what they were working on during the bye week. We'll hear from Brent Venables and from Jeff Scott as well. Also get you in a little bit for South Carolina's game this upcoming week against Georgia. This is ESPN Upstate, ESPNUpstate.com, and the Radio.com app.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
You're having fun over there with that board, aren't you?
Yeah, I hit play on the board and on the screen, and it wouldn't play it. Weird.
Understand.
System didn't want rival sons.
Apparently not. What was that you were making fun of me for listening to earlier today? Shinedown?
Yeah. You got a problem with Public Enemy?
I have no problem with Public Enemy. I was just turning it into a music discussion. I have no problem with Public Enemy. Big fan. Huge. Goes back to what we were talking about with Snoop Dogg. You pay for Public Enemy, you get Public Enemy, right? Kind of same situation. Josh Tomlin was able to retire the first batter of the eighth inning. He retired all four batters that he faced. They have brought in Shane Green to negotiate the final two outs of the eighth inning, and they are two big outs, Goldschmidt and Ozuna. We'll keep you updated on what's going on. The Braves, again, I feel badly that I'm counting down the outs. They are five defensive outs away from the NLCS, and right now I'm sure if you are a Braves fan, you are a nervous Nelly, if you will, because you know this bullpen is anything but certain. We'll see if they can at least negotiate these final two outs here in the bottom of the eighth and then obviously the ninth inning. It looks like the shadows have finally stabilized too, Diesel. I know you were worried about the shadows. I know that they take into account that stuff from the architectural standpoint, but there are ways to angle things to where it's like, you know, you can angle it to where, okay, it's not going to completely be in the eyes of your outfielders. Like, it can be kind of at the side. Like, you can make the sun kind of go basically from third base over the top to first base, not go from, you know, all the way above the stadium to right in the eyes as it's setting. The way that entire stadium fits is that it's faced toward the east, toward the Mississippi River. So when the sun sets in the west, it basically means that your outfielders are looking straight at the sun as it's setting. That's not easy to do. As Paul Goldschmidt does something also that's not easy to do, get a broken bat double down the left field line, and the Cardinals have the tying run in scoring position with one out in the bottom of the eighth inning. I also wanted to at least bring this back to the forefront, as we were talking about it earlier. It's part of our poll question at ESPN Upstate. 60% of you surveyed do not believe that sports leagues should compel bad owners, whether it be non-profitable, non-competitive, or ones that don't want to spend. You don't believe that they should be compelled to sell their teams. Do we just have a bunch of advocates for, you know, business here? It's funny how this show seems to find people who agree to some of the most, what I would call, weird stances to live by. Like the people who felt sorry about the schools who wouldn't get the profits from the name, image, and likeness money. like who's currying favor for the schools getting profits, and who's currying favor for Mark Emmert, that stooge in Indianapolis?
And the fans who defended other fans for booing potentially injured players.
Well, again. So y'all, I've come to realize this ESPN Upstate fan base, y'all stand on some really weird hills. So basically, you find it okay. You find it just morally okay. You don't find it morally reprehensible that Daniel Snyder is still allowed to exist as owner of the Washington Redskins, or Jim Dolan as owner of the New York Knicks, or Derek Jeter and his ownership group of the Miami Marlins, or the Rosses with the Miami Dolphins. It's, to me, should be something where you should have some onus, either as a fan or the league's commissioner should have some onus. Yes, you are an advocate for the commissioners and you serve, or an advocate for the owners, and you serve at the behest of the owners. But if the owners are not helping you do your job, then why in the world does it behoove you to have them as part of your fraternity? That, to me, is the biggest question that sits in my mind when you're talking about lackadaisical ownership from the standpoint of a sports franchise. It should be more like it is in Europe, or more like it is with colleges. If you pay the money as a season ticket holder or a PSL holder, or your name is somehow in some way connected to the team monetarily, You should have the right to demand more. You should have the ability to stand for more. And quite honestly, this particular regression of this particular nature cannot stand.
To play devil's advocate, this is still America.
It is.
Where you can't force someone to give up something that they don't want to sell.
But you're also having to have...
I understand that these owners are doing a disservice to their team and to their fans. That can't be understated.
But just because you have the money doesn't mean you're allowed to buy a team. Your ownership is still subject to the voting members of the owners of the other group. So, like, if the other owners see that a franchise is not living up to the expectations that the other owners have, then they should be able to vote you out. It's almost kind of like Big Brother.
Right, but the way you just described it, you almost described that the fans should have the ability to push an owner out.
They should. So, and but I'm saying also the owner should as well. I'm saying there should be some oversight. Right now, there is no oversight. There should be oversight in some way, shape, or form. Because there's the old adage that says you can never fire the owner. Well, you should be able to have you should be able to fire the owner. You should be able to fire the owner if the owner stinks. If the owner has stunk for the entire 20 years of his reign for a franchise. But who knows? I'm just a mild-mannered radio host who sometimes loses his temper and has alienated the fan base, apparently. 844-GSP, ESPN, the phone number, text line 71307. Clemson taking on Florida State this weekend. It's a 3:30 kick. Our coverage begins on our sister station, 93.3 The Planet, with the Ingles College Football Kickoff Show, which begins at 10:30. Mark Ryan, Fatboy, and Nine all in the saddle for that one. We talked earlier this week with regards to just kind of how the I was going to finish that sentence, and then I find that Yadier Molina has hit a soft single over first base just outside of the outstretched arms of Freddie Freeman, and we are tied in St. Louis. Oy.
And he does so with two outs.
Ugh.
That's clutch hitting right
of
there.
That's
clutch hitting.
Of all the freaking people, it's Yadier freaking Molina. Ugh. Gosh, I hate that guy. Oh! I can't explain why I hate that guy currently, because it will alienate everybody. Oh, I hate that guy. Oh! Freddie almost had it.
Off the tip of his glove.
Oh, Freddie almost had it. Oh!
Oh.
And we're all tied at four. We're going to be here a while. We were talking about Clemson going into Florida State and how we basically said, this is a situation for Clemson where the bye week came at the best possible time off of a subpar performance, yet a win against North Carolina. Brent Venables on how Clemson treated this week. They treated it as basically almost a full practice week and worked on a lot as they got themselves not only a little bit of rest and relaxation, but also the ability to self-scout their team.
Fundamental improvement. Again, technique and eyes and alignments and just being physical. I had a great week of practice. And just being more precise with what we're doing. And again, still dealing with a lot of youth, seeing some good, seeing some bad, seeing some improvement without question, starting with our defensive line. And but we got a ways to go still. You know, we got immeasurable improvement still. And I've been pleased with our guys' effort and their attitude. Just got to keep grinding. And not one necessarily specific area. Just got to be more precise in what we're doing, whether it's coverage or run fits or alignments or the techniques that go with some of those alignments and those calls.
What would you say was the part of the game that lacked more, the offense or the defense against North Carolina? Because I would say...
I can't say both.
So I'm saying...
The defense giving up 20 points or 19 points, that's not...
Wasn't bad.
That's not bad. It was the offense just couldn't get out of their own way.
But there is something to be said for the defense allowing the score in that position. That's usually a position where they've come up strong. That's the part of it that obviously a, you know, situationally they were spotty. They did get the stop on the two-point conversion. That part of it is good. But it's almost as if Brent Venables believes that his group really didn't have much to hang its head on, especially when they made the play that won them the football game. Going in, obviously, to this week, James Blackman, according to the folks at Florida State, James Blackman is going to start, but Alex Hornibrook is still going to play. Brent Venables asked about the difference and contrast between the two men playing quarterback for the Seminoles.
I see a lot more similarities than differences. Two guys that understand the system, two guys that are playing well within the system, both of them long and you know, have good mobility. Move the pocket when they need to, do a good job of managing the offense and throwing with precision. Both of them got big arms, can take the top off the defense, and both of them have enough savviness that, you know, when things break down, they can improvise and make plays, extend plays, and have the ability and the instincts to keep their eyes down the field and create a lot of big plays that way. And so they both got great leadership and toughness. I've seen them both get stroked pretty good and respond. And we know Blackman, you know, had a really nice year last year as a first-year starter. So, and Hornibrook's a winner. You know, what he's done at Wisconsin, he's used to winning. He's used to leading. And so they got a lot of the same characteristics and traits.
That is Brent Venables, Clemson defensive coordinator, as the Tigers get ready for Florida State. Jeff Scott, co-offensive coordinator, also spoke to reporters today about how this particular bye week comes at the right time for Clemson and how it helps their quarterback reset his focus.
You know, overall, the biggest thing watching the video was just, you know, a lack of the consistent execution that maybe we've had in other games. So I think it was a good time for an open week. Last week was really beneficial for us, going back, not looking just at the North Carolina game, but really all five games and seeing where we can get better. You know, I think really focusing on the details of what we're doing and the fundamentals of how we do it. Also did a really good self-scout offensively, and then also at each position, just looking at all the details, making sure that we're countering any of the tendencies that we may have.
That is a little bit from Jeff Scott. And obviously, the offense, I mean, there have been times where the offense has looked great. There have been moments. There was the one drive, the 75-yard drive in the North Carolina game was literally everything Trevor Lawrence was latter half of the year last year and more. The throws to the opposite side of the throws from the opposite hash, the back shoulder fades, all the particular stuff that you saw from Lawrence that made him look like an NFL prospect, you saw it in that one scoring drive. And then you saw a lack of pressure, and you saw a team that is well coached, that had a book on the Clemson offense. A Clemson offense that, by the way, and this is part of Clemson's own worst enemy, is that Clemson does not face enough teams that know how to defend them properly, so it lulls you into a false insecurity. It makes you feel like you can run all your stuff at will, all your base plays at will against an opponent, and because of that, you don't know what to do when you hit adversity. And that's part of what I think that's the biggest problem with Trevor Lawrence, is that he has not faced adversity until now. Of course, going into Florida State, this is obviously a team that comes in with a lot of its base athletes, although, again, you wonder who's coaching them. What Jeff Scott had to say about his first initial film study of the Noles.
No doubt that they've improved from where they were after the first two games defensively. You know, they've probably played their best game defensively in their last outing with NC State, you know, holding them to maybe 370 and 88 rushing. So you can see a lot of improvement. They're getting better game by game. Probably be the biggest defensive front that we'll face all year. They really primarily run an odd front, and I think they're 311, 346, and 305 across the board. So really big guys up front that, you know, kind of play two gaps and make it difficult to move those guys inside. They've done a good job getting some pressure on the quarterback. They've got 17 sacks on the year, and as always, very athletic on the back end, and just look like they're a lot more comfortable here these last few weeks, knowing what they're doing.
3-2 on the season is Florida State again. Their last action, 31-13 victory, I should say, over NC State at Doak Campbell Stadium. Again, they come to Death Valley this week off of a bye. So both Clemson and the Noles playing off of a bye. We'll do a little bit more tomorrow on South Carolina. Again, no real new sound from them other than the Will Muschamp teleconference. We do have to tell you on that. Still about another 2 to 3 weeks away from getting Dylan Wonnum back in the fold. So that part of it is going to be a little bit different for them. They're going to have to figure out whether or not Jalen Nichols can be the man there at the right tackle position. The one thing that is good about, from what we heard from the teleconference on the situation involving the injury front for South Carolina, is it looks like Rico Dowdle is going to be okay. They'll know more about the carry-on joiner later part of this week. They'll possibly have another update on him tomorrow, they should say.
Acuna just hits a 2-2 ground rule double.
Oh, wow, look at that. Right past the sliding Marcell Ozuna. That game currently in the ninth inning. Atlanta 4, St. Louis 4. Acuna with that double to lead off the top of the ninth inning against Carlos Martinez, who has become a pariah in St. Louis, to say the least. They are not a fan of him. According to those who I follow on Twitter who are still in St. Louis, there was a chorus of boos that greeted him when he came out of the bullpen. He, of course, blew the lead yesterday for St. Louis and has not necessarily done himself any favors among the St. Louis faithful, but continues to be run out there by manager Mike Schilt. And Ozzie Albies, who's already homered today, by the way, continuing to try and see what he can do to possibly drive Acuna home. We'll keep you updated on what's going on there. This one from the text line, I did want to at least put this out from the 864. The fans can push an owner out. This is JT and Greer. The fans can push an owner out by not going to the games. Again, I don't know if that always works. That's good. That's good to push out guys who you don't like in the coaching staff. I don't know how that pushes ownership out. The other texter from the 864, should be a competition committee in all sports leagues professionally to maintain competitiveness, would minimize tanking. Not a fan. I'm not opposed to that, at least conceptually. But I do think that there should be some way for oversight, for in a way for you to have an ability to legislate some way that if an owner is falling short of what the standard is for a sport, whether it's not spending enough, whether it's spending haphazardly the wrong way, or just not fielding a competitive enough organization and franchise, that there should be a step that can be taken either by the commissioners of the league or by the fan base. 844-GSP, ESPN, the phone number, text line 71307. Second week in a row, we get to talk about a winning weekend for Limestone. Their head coach, Brian Turk, joins us for his usual Monday spot with us. It's ESPN Upstate.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Are they really going to bring Julio Teheran in the ninth inning of a tied playoff game? Is that really going to be a thing? I don't know if I want that to be a thing if I'm a Braves fan. Again, we'll see. We will see. The Braves got that RBI, got that leadoff double from Acuna. They could not do anything with it, including Freddie Freeman, who just looks absolutely lost at the plate right now for the Braves. They go to the bottom of the ninth, tied at 4. We'll see what happens. And again, we'll see if it's Teheran. They would add Teheran and Melanson both warming up in the bullpen, and we'll see whether or not it is Teheran or if it is Melanson. I'm guessing Melanson would only have come in if they had taken the lead. It is now time to bring in the head coach of the Limestone Saints, Brian Turk, his usual spot with us here on a Monday afternoon evening. And coach, two wins in a row for the first time since early in the 2017 season. They beat Catawba on your homecoming, 52-24. First of all, congratulations. And I know we talked last week about this team not feeling itself. How impressed are you with the ability to compartmentalize the success of the previous week and put forth another representative effort?
Very, very proud. And that's honestly the best way to put it. They really kind of were able to leave what was the success from last week behind. And honestly, they came in as a clean slate. We took Catawba super seriously. We know the kind of pride and tradition they have in their program. And we wanted to make sure that we were able to come out with our best foot forward. And honestly, we did. We had scored a school record 28 points in the first quarter. And, you know, I give their team a lot of credit. You know, I've been around many teams and been on teams before that would have folded after the first quarter. And they came and battled back and made it a ball game. But really proud of our kids' resiliency to stay in it and just play a complete game for the full four quarters.
600 yards of total offense. First ever homecoming win. What was working for you offensively?
Well, honestly, you know, it was all really working. It was just – but it wasn't me. It was the kids who were making it work. We were getting great run blocking up front. First play of the game went for 48 yards and, you know, kind of set the tone for the rest of the day. We had up, like, I think, 266 rushing and like 40 carries. We averaged like 8 yards a play. It was just one of those days where we executed at a high level. And it's the stuff that, you know, the fun part about it is we didn't really even play that well. We had a lot of mistakes here and there that we need to fix going forward if we want to continue to compete against really these top level teams in our conference. And it's a lot of stuff left to learn. I got to get better as a play caller and got to get better as a coach each week like these kids do, but really encouraged by what the guys put on the field, offense and defense.
I know you had mentioned your offensive line as being a group that really didn't have the results to back up their successes. What does it mean for this group to get, you know, the first two 100-yard rushers for the first time in team history, to get that many yards on total offense? What does it mean for that group particularly?
It's a huge confidence builder. Our offensive line coach, Corey Woods, is a fantastic coach, and he's just put in a lot of confidence into these guys. They play hard. They play for each other. And just, you know, sometimes the offensive line, as you know, in football, you don't really get any credit until something – or notice until something bad happens. And it's really nice to be able to point at something when it does – when it goes good. And, you know, the guys, we allowed one sack, and it was kind of a cheap one. They played really well in pass protection, gave us time to throw it. And they are the reason we've been able to honestly win these back-to-back games, because they set the tone for us up front offensively and allow us, you know, to be able to do things both run and pass.
Senior defensive back Manny Ogletree for your team. Coach Brian Turk joining us here, the head coach of Limestone. He was the conference's defensive player of the week. What was part of his game that made him earn that honor?
Manny is it doesn't go part of the honor, but his off the field, you're not going to meet a better person. He's got all the intangibles of a football player, a leader. On the field, though, he was all over the place. He had two interceptions. Honestly, the few times the ball came to his side, he was in the area making tackles, very physical in the run game when the run came his way. You know, I can't say enough good stuff about him. He was voted a permanent team captain for us this year. And I thought the kids made a great selection in him. He works so hard. He's improved himself so much as a college football player. He's kind of overshadowed a little bit by our former defensive back, Josh Simmons. But he's got tons of talent and ability. You know, I don't know where his future holds, but I know that I'm so glad to have him as part of my team.
I know you have Malik Brooks, you have DJ Phillips, and a lot of other guys who came and had started their careers elsewhere before coming to Limestone. What kind of effect does that have on the other players on your squad who are either starting out at Limestone or have been only there, the fact that this particular opportunity provides a second chance for them?
You know, I think it really is a great example of that. We have a lot of things to offer here. It's a great college, a great campus, got a lot of facilities. And it's obviously it's a chance to play football at a high level. I mean, you look at Vincent and Josh, guys who came to our program, came from high school. Now it opens doors for people who are transferring or looking, you know, this transfer portal, this thing is this year. You know, that's another topic for you and I to have another day, but it's really opened a lot of doors and people are looking, and it's, hey, we've got transfers here from several different schools. They're not the only two guys, but you can come here and there's an opportunity to go to the next level, but it's also a great chance to play football in a great conference that it's super competitive. It's a good, you're going to get developed. You're going to grow as a football player and as a man.
What did you think about Vincent's touchdown for the Jets this weekend?
Oh, it was awesome. He's got unbelievable speed. And then I saw right after he scored, it flashed up second touchdown of the season. And I went, holy cow. I think I got problems sometimes. And I see that stat and I'm like, some people got bigger problems than I do. I could not be more proud of him. He is a tremendous human being. And, you know, the fact, like I think I told you before, when he signed with them, like I knew they had a plan in place for him. That's when people go out and target you off the practice squad, they want to do something with you. And he's going to make the most of his opportunity. I know he's going to do great on teams. He's going to be a guy in the locker room that he's going to lead by example. He's going to be in his playbook. He's going to be a first there, first in, last out type of guy. And he's definitely going to make his mark in the NFL, wherever it may be.
Yeah, all they got to do is get that quarterback healthy with the spleen and the mono. That's all they got to do.
Yeah, no doubt about that.
Last one for you. You guys have Wingate coming up. Obviously, that's a tough matchup, a ranked team. It's on the road. What do you do? I mean, this might honestly be the best thing for you, getting to go on the road and have this band of brothers try to come in and keep this win streak alive. What has to happen for you guys to make that happen?
Well, first off, you're absolutely right. Amen. You need to come speak to the team and you say, you got some good stuff here. we need to get away and we need to kind of like just be us. And, I got so much respect for Coach Reich. His brother is the head coach at the Colts, and he is just a tremendous person. And he's been one of the most welcoming coaches in the conference to me. I got a lot of respect for how he runs his program. We have our hands full, but the biggest thing that we need to do is focus on ourselves. That's been our focus the last 2 weeks is, Pembroke's got a good team. Catawba's got a good team. Wingate, obviously, they're top 15 in the country, and we can – you know, I can tell you 10 different players on their team that's going to cause me to stay up late at night. But we focus on ourselves, and we continue to take care of ourselves, making sure we're great on third down, block well, tackle well, and don't commit turnovers. We'll give ourselves a chance. We're going to try to.
Yeah, well, do us a favor and at least get some sleep between now and then. We want to make sure that you're well rested for that. Best of luck.
I appreciate it.
Best of luck this weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good. See you then. Go Saints.
That is head coach Brian Turk. Happy for him to get that second consecutive victory and the first ever homecoming victory for the Limestone Saints. So after Tommy Edman led off with a single, he moves to second after a throwing error. They tried to throw behind the runner at first base from the right field corner, and they ended up throwing it past first base and almost went into the dugout, causing the runner to advance to second base. There are two out now in the inning, and we'll see whether or not the Cardinals can possibly get out of this jam without there being a particular advance or without there being a run scored. They actually kept Green in. They kept Green in for a second inning of work, so we'll see whether or not that happens here on ESPN Upstate, ESPNUpstate.com, and the Radio.com app. What's left on the cutting room floor is next. This is ESPN Upstate. I'm going there tomorrow. I'm going to need a police escort in and out of Pickens County. Can you hook me up? Oh, did he get it? Oh, no, he missed it. Good. Dexter Fowler looked like he almost had won the game for the Cardinals. We're going to keep an eye on this one for you here. Cardinals 4, Braves 4, runner at second, bottom 9, 3-2 the count on Fowler. Tomorrow on the program, it is a CNC Tuesday. Colin Taylor and Matt Connolly, Gamecock Central, and the state newspaper's Clemson beat writer will give us a back-and-forth look at what's going up this week for both Clemson and South Carolina. We'll do a little bit more than we did today on South Carolina, Georgia, also Clemson, Florida State. Florida State insists that they're using two quarterbacks for that game on Saturday. Both Blackman and Hornibrook expected to play. Seems to be an odd strategy, bold strategy, Cotton. We'll see if it plays out. Thank you so much, Diesel, for producing. Thank you for listening and for the still-recovering Mark Sturgis. My name is Will Pelagic. Fowler struck out. We go to extra innings, by the way, in St. Louis. We say so long, South Carolina.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.